Losing a parent at a young age is a life-altering experience. Yet support for grieving children and young adults is often hard to find. Kara Belvins knows this pain firsthand. After losing her mother as a child, she has turned her grief into purpose.
By creating Empower, this nonprofit provides bereaved children with community, mentorship, and friendship at events across the nation. In this episode, we sit down with Kara to hear her story, learn about Empower, and explore how we can change the narrative surrounding parent loss. Welcome to another episode of Two Girls with Grief podcast. We're so happy to have Kara Belvin, founder of Empower, with us today and learn all about her nonprofit organization.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful that you would have me on. I appreciate it. So happy to be here.
So you run an organization called Empower, and I feel like you can't start an organization like Empower. And we'll get into that in a moment about what Empower is and what do y'all do. But obviously you've had to have a griefy experience yourself. So do you mind sharing a little bit about the person you lost and how you began your grief journey?
Yeah, sure. So my mom, Kit, her name was Kit Murphy. She died of breast cancer when I was 9 years old. She was only 37. And at the time, as you can imagine, that was a very isolating experience, particularly because I didn't know anyone else who had lost a parent growing up. And, you know, although I had a ton of support after my mom died, everyone in the community really rallied around my brother and my dad and I. And we had so much love from family and friends, extended family, extended friends. But I'd say it was like living on planet Mars for, you know, a good solid 10 years after my mom died. And had I had an organization like Empower, I think it really would have just changed the trajectory of my life. So I started this nonprofit around my dining room table 10 years ago. It sort of had this like nagging idea, like, why didn't someone do this? Like, why wasn't there an organization like this for kids like me? And so I can go into this in a little bit later in the podcast, but when I started this, it was actually an idea that I had just to take teenage girls away on Mother's Day. So for many years, we weren't serving kids who'd lost their father. We were serving only specifically girls who lost their mom. And my simple idea was to bring them away on Mother's Day for like a weekend, like a sleepover, a retreat in downtown Boston where I live. And that first event that I held, there were only 7 girls who came to that Mother's Day retreat that year. 7 girls, 7 chaperones like me. And it was just magic. And from that day forward, that one event multiplied in many events throughout the year. And then ultimately morphed into a mentor program, a lot like Big Brothers Big Sisters, where, you know, you could match a child who lost their mom with an adult woman like me who had lost her mom and survived it, right? Because I didn't know you could survive it when I was little. I didn't know a woman like me existed. And so that's really how Empower started. It was called Empower Her, in fact. And just within the last few years, thankfully, we expanded to become more gender inclusive. So today we serve boys, girls, non-binary youth who've lost their mother or father. So it really took me, I'd say, almost a decade to really create a model that could scale and become more gender inclusive and also serve kids who'd lost a parent and not just so maniacally focused on mother loss.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I still have a hard time with all those different days because it's like, what do you want to do on Mother's Day? Do you want to do something big? Do you want to celebrate it? Do you want to pretend it doesn't happen? And I have so much loss with my family that there's like every month there's something. You know, it's hard. Birthday or death anniversary or sibling day, Father's Day, whatever. And I always wonder, like, how do I want to celebrate this year? And I feel like I try to take the pressure off of it now of like, maybe I don't want to. Maybe I do want to do something. But I can imagine that even just doing something like that, like going somewhere for Mother's Day, is a very healing way because it's like you're honoring them, but you're also honoring the experience that it's a very hard thing.
Totally. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's why the idea I say is so simple because, you know, arguably you could say Mother's Day is the hardest day, or you could say Father's Day is the hardest day, but that's really not the truth for everyone. It could be a death anniversary. It could be a holiday. It could be a birthday. It's like never tell someone else's story. But my story growing up was this. every year that Mother's Day was coming around, I felt acutely aware I was different than everyone else in my class, in my grade, in my social circle. It was almost like the 2 months leading up to the day were worse than the day. So whatever that milestone is for someone who's grieving the loss of a loved one, it's like physiological. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people will agree, like there's a little bit of anxiety, there's maybe greater depression, or there's feeling of isolation or being othered. And that's what I felt. And that's what I thought I could maybe simply change if I had invited, you know, the girls to like pack their bag and look forward to going somewhere on Mother's Day. And I'm not suggesting my family got it wrong. Like on Mother's Day, I don't think my dad knew how to celebrate the day. I don't think our teachers knew what to do. So I hold no ill will for anyone around that was trying to at least maybe not ignore the hard time coming up, but just didn't know what to do with it. So we started this around what I thought were the most difficult holidays, Mother's Day, Father's Day, that I thought would create more isolation for a child. And how could you mitigate that? Like how could you in some tiny way make it a little bit easier? And it's when, you know, you're part of a club no one wants to be a part of. We all know that. But
worst
this
clubs.
Is your life. Yeah, it's a terrible club. Nobody wants to be in this club. And not as a child, particularly.
Yeah.
So I was simply trying to build community for girls and women. It's like, you know, come together, look around the room and realize you're not alone in your grief. That's all I wanted. I wanted to prove to you you're not alone in this, because I did feel alone in this. I felt like, oh my God, I'm the only girl in the world whose mom died. And that was not true.
I joke with Kendall that I have too many memberships and I would like less. I don't want all these memberships to all these different sad clubs. But no. I think it is great because you don't know what's going to work. And like you said, like, you don't fault anyone for what they did or didn't do. And for some people, it might be an amazing thing. Some people, it might not work, but it's just an option that might be helpful for people that don't know what to do. And I think you just need options, because you do feel alone, you do feel isolated, and you do feel like nobody gets it, especially at a young age. I lost my first parent, I think, at 26. And even then, I felt like a baby. I was just like, what am I doing here? This isn't possible. But I think I was a little bit more in touch with my emotions than like a kid or a young adult. Like, I didn't even know who I was at that point at all. So there's other layers of that, of just like how much loss can kind of sway you in either direction or take you in a totally different life path without even knowing what those feelings mean.
Exactly. So today, like we always say, like, take what you want and leave the rest. We're not suggesting that every child who enrolls first, you know, kids can enroll kids up through age 24, because technically childhood bereavement is up through age 24, right? So a child who enrolls in our program or a young adult who enrolls, we say, take what you want and leave the rest. I'm not suggesting that you want a mentor. I'm not suggesting that you need a mentor right now. I'm just saying I'm building very selfishly. I'm building something I so desperately wished I had. I wish I met like a 40-year-old woman when I was growing up whose mom died and who survived it and could kind of pull me aside and say, like, I know a little bit about what you're going through. That didn't exist for me. They were like aliens from my planet when I finally got older and started meeting. When I built community, like you've built a beautiful community just in this podcast alone. And I try to tell that to young people, like, as your world opens up and as you get older and you travel and there's experiences, you will meet other people who know adversity and you'll feel less alone. You'll draw strength from each other. But in the meantime, I'm gonna offer you this. I'm going to offer a mentor, or I'm going to offer these events. Now, an event for some girls, you know, or boys, they'll come to an event and it'll make them 2 feet taller. You know, they'll put their shoulders back. Their confidence is regained because they're like, oh my God, there's all these other people powering through their grief too. And they have to go to school tomorrow and keep up with a world going on around them as normal when nothing really feels really normal in your life after you've lost a parent. And so that was always the idea behind this nonprofit. Then I made it very complicated because we then, you know, went national and international with it, and we had to raise a lot of money, and we had to, you know, we've remained privately funded, and you're trying to also have the conversation, a conversation that's really hard to have. And I think that makes us all kind of uncomfortable at our core to talk about, especially the young parent. But as we always say, you know, we can talk about hard things, we can do hard things, and I'm grateful for this conversation for that reason. you know, just being invited to be a part of the conversation is, I'm so grateful for.
I think it's been interesting that like Rachel and I have found when we've been talking to these, our guests, and they all have companies or nonprofits or they're doing advocacy work. Their personal story is so intertwined in their why and their mission, you know, being that we're all grievers and we all came into this in a very like heartbroken place. And we were even talking to Sarah Ryan, and she's a poet, but she focuses on like grief poetry and is really like big in the grief community, and talked about we need to keep talking about grief and still like trying to destigmatize these conversations and make it accessible for people to know like it's okay to talk about these feelings that we have. And like, it's okay to talk about the fact that these were the worst days of our lives when we found out. And like Rachel and I talk all the time, it's better to grieve together, because I independently have grieved alone for so long. And even in the past year, we're like, wow, our grief has just like changed immensely in the past year of like knowing each other, being a part of a grief group, having this podcast. Like, it's just amazing how community and having friends that know what you're going through changes that.
I think community is the answer. I think particularly for a child, kids need it all. Like, you know, I have two kids of my own. My kids are 17 and 14. And when people say like it takes a village, it truly does, because you want other people mentoring your kids. You want other caring and loving adults to show up for your own kids and guide them and like pull them aside and say, like, I know what you're going through, because your parents aren't the end all be all. I always look back on my dad's life, and I think it really wasn't in my dad's job description to teach me how to grieve. Like, my dad's job was to tell me he loved me, and he told me every day how much he loved me. And he put dinner on the table at 5 o'clock, and he never missed a tennis match or a field hockey game or something. Like, those were exhausting times in my dad's life, and he was grieving my mom. And so I look back at like the people around me. I needed a village and I needed it all. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of therapy and hope, you know, any child who does lose a parent, you know, kind of finds their way to it. But I built a nonprofit that was non-therapeutic. It was meant to be community-based. It was meant to be everyday people talking to kids about this hard thing, because growing up, everyone kind of avoided the topic with me. And it made it feel like, oh, only a professional can talk to you about your mom who died. Like, or I don't know, people thought I was made of glass and I would shatter if they touched me, or no one talked to me about it. And it was that I was trying to change that, as you say. You're trying to demystify, like you're trying to take away all of this taboo or all of these, you know, all of these rules that say like you're not allowed to talk about this here. If you do, you'll suck the air right out of this room. Like, we all know that that's still true. It's still not easy to talk about my mom, especially when I have to tell someone for the first time my mother died when I was 9 years old. It does suck the air out of the room. But then we all realize we're like kind of on this journey together now. Like, it's up and down. And it's hard. You know, people talking about grief is hard. If there's someone listening who might be interested in becoming a mentor, I would say, please consider, if you're in one of our active cities, volunteer as a mentor at Empower. It'll be the most meaningful thing you've ever done, like to be in service for somebody, for a kid that you kind of understand like the path that they're going to walk down. But it's hard, but the most meaningful thing you could do. You know, losing my mom when I was young was the most deeply personal thing that ever happened to me. And it's why I never talked about it. Yeah. And I know that mistake now looking back.
So you mentioned the mentorship portion, and I want to dive a little deeper into that. And how is that laid out? How is that set up? And what is the impact that you have seen for these kids when they have a mentor?
So the mentor was built out of this vision I had in those early years that I organized Empower. It was really just a series of events. So the events were, you know, a sleepover on Mother's Day, and then it was like a beach party and a cooking class with like a celebrity chef from Boston would donate all of his time. Or it was an actor's workshop, because I had a friend who was an actor and just would donate, you know, her whole day to teaching an actor's class. It was like these events were magic. And it's not because the kids were like, or because they loved yoga or they loved acting. It was because they were looking for community. They just wanted to be in the same room with other kids who kind of understood what they were going through. And when I was envisioning a mentor program, I was just envisioning kind of pairing up like all these adults I had in the room who were volunteering and building community if they were in a one-on-one mentor, you know, relationship with this child, they could give year-round support and be someone that, that the kid could kind of put in their back pocket. Like some of our mentees, they want to talk to their mentor every day, all day, or they want 2 months to go by without, you know, having to talk about it or get together because they just want to kind of park it for a minute. And that's okay in grief too. Like it's not linear and we can't pretend to know how what a kid is going through unless you ask them. But so our mentor program is very simply, mentors are volunteers from the community who are 25 years old and older and who have had the experience of parent loss. So it's a man or woman or non-binary adult who lost a parent in childhood like me. I mean, I was 9 years old and I understand that's so young, but it could be someone who lost a parent in their 20s, 30s, or 40s who would make a great mentor as well. And we make this match very deliberately. We use the family's input the whole way through. I mean, we sort of hold the family's hand through the process where we're making a match and the family will a lot of times tell us kind of what they're looking for. Maybe somebody younger who's closer in age to their child. So this is the surviving guardian that we're working with when we match. Or that surviving guardian might want somebody older. You know, I'm 47 years old. My mother died when I was 9. I know that's a long time, you know, that's a long time span. But maybe they're looking for someone like me who's got a little bit more life experience or, you know, mature or can handle tough conversations perhaps or whatever it is. So once the match is made, and once the mentor has been screened and trained, you know, we give a ton of support to our mentors. We monitor the match for that first year. And then and they do everyday activities together. So our mentors are not social workers and they're not grief experts. They are really just adults who show up, right? To just show up and show a kid that you care. And I think maybe most importantly, a mentor is someone that's not inside their family nucleus. So growing up, as I said, I had a ton of support and my mom's friends and family were amazing. And like, you know, coming down and, you know, to my rescue when it was prom dress shopping or if it was like teaching me how to pop a pimple, it was like all the stereotypical things you think of the 9-year-old girl, you know, growing up needs after her mom dies. But they were all grieving my mom. And for that reason, it was hard for me to grieve with them because I was so afraid to make them even more upset, or I knew that it was hard for them to see me cry. So you kind of want to protect all those people around you. And so it's sometimes not, it's not always the best place to grieve. But when you have this mentor who's in the right job description of just like, they kind of get it and they're just there with no judgment and just to show up. So our mentor program is now, you know, around the country and in London and the United Kingdom. And all of that is really, I think, I hope it well explained on our website for anyone listening that might be interested in being a mentor.
That's amazing. And I something that you said about your family and being outside of like the family nucleus, I think that part is a very important piece that I didn't even think about was necessary because I used to only talk about my grief to my family. But I feel like when you all have, I mean, my leftover family, I only have a brother left, but then I have cousins, but talking to people about it, sometimes it's like they might have opinions or thoughts about it and you're just, everyone's experience with it and your experience and your relationship to that person is still unique. And sometimes it makes it hard to want to say everything you want to say or share what you want to say, or because of your family, they might take what you said wrong.
Yeah.
Or like make you feel bad about it and not intentionally. And what I found from just building this grief community and like having like someone like Kendall is just being able to share it, but like you get it, but you don't have that judgment or that exterior thoughts of like, okay, because of this, this, and this. It's like she's just hearing the story as I tell it. And she doesn't have any previous like knowledge or knew them personally. And there's something so freeing about that to just say what you want to say and someone can just like listen to it and take you at your word rather than like in muddling their own grief feelings. And I don't think we talk about that specific aspect enough, how sometimes it's so freeing for you to just release it into a space where you can do that.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, in our mentor program is really unique. So we're the only ones in the world who had the idea to really like start a one-on-one mentor program for kids. There's a million different kinds of mentor programs across the country that are making huge impacts. But the thought that you could match a child with a mentor who can relate to the loss is life-changing because all the science says, like, you learn best from someone ahead of you on that journey, right? Like, you, there's you could draw strength, you could emulate, you can like see yourself in someone else's story. And that is what is freeing. That's freeing to me. That reduces isolation in my mind. And building, that's how you really build community, is saying like, look, we're all in this together. You know, your story is not my story. And don't ever let anyone tell your story means, growing up, I think my family, out of love, wanted me and my brother to kind of be over it after 2 years. Like, you know, and I don't say that begrudgingly. I say that out of love. Really, people are, they're heartbroken to watch you grieve.
Yeah.
I think that that's a bearable experience to watch, to witness someone grieve. And so out of love, they're saying, come on, let's pick yourself up. Like, let's move forward. Like, let's, why are we still crying about this? And that is where you were saying, like, maybe that there's some offense taken or that feels like they're judging you. I don't think there's any judgment. I just think it's out of love and out of confusion. Maybe that's not where you want to grieve. And maybe you want to grieve with like a new community where you don't have to explain yourself, or you don't feel that there's any judgment, or you don't have that feeling like you have to protect them in it as well.
Yeah. I feel like, as like, Kendall's the oldest sibling, I'm the youngest, and I feel like our reactions would be different. And Kendall's very much like a protector, and I was like the carefree youngest child. And I could see where, you know, like, as my brother trying to help me, but in his way to help me, or how he thinks that it would make sense, or how he doesn't want his only sister and youngest sister to be feeling, but how he might process it might be different than me. How he handles it is different. So I think it's hard, especially when emotions are so high, for that to sometimes cause more damage than good, but it's coming from a loving place. But yeah, sometimes when you're just so in it, you don't even see it that way, right? It just causes friction. But it is from a place of love, but it's hard because it's so too close to the situation that you need some objectivity to that.
You're right. And look, I commend every family for being able to talk openly about, you know, a loss. I mean, that's a really hard thing to do. Like, in my family, we really couldn't do it. And maybe in part, like, it was in the 80s was like a crazy time. And especially to like lose a parent when there really were no resources. There certainly wasn't, you know, a podcast that I could go like immerse myself in. There weren't any books on the shelf. Like, there wasn't a lot of access to therapy. So I think, you know, it's really commendable when families can talk openly. And we really try to encourage that as much as possible with all the families that we know, to have open conversations. But I feel like, you know, for us, they were just so hard to do. So the pictures kind of came down and we just kind of moved on. Again, I hold no ill will for that, because that was in part like survival. But you're right. I mean, it's, if you can have a, if you can find a community, you know, and listening to a podcast is one way to do it, right? Like, it's you trying to see yourself in someone else's story that's not your own, that's you can try and kind of relate to, that's not your family's story. And every story is a little complex, too.
We had a comment recently where someone just said that listening to me and Kendall is like listening to two friends that get her grief, and she feels less alone. And that comment has kind of been replaying in my head, because I feel like that is something that we wanted to create, and inspiration for that is like, we wanted to create a space that would have been helpful for us as people that lost people and feel very lost in that and isolated. It's like, if we can talk about these things and help normalize the conversation, then hopefully that'll make you feel less alone. Just reading that comment, I was like, oh, that is something that we want. And I'm glad that that's coming through, that people listening to it are like, oh, I feel like you're my friends and we're just talking about this. And I think that should be the more common thing, because we should be able to talk about it, whether you experience grief or not. If I'm feeling something that is related to my grief or the people that I lost, I feel like I should just be able to say it. And by talking about it now through the podcast and everything, I now feel comfortable to just say the thing, which before I wouldn't. I would just keep it in. And now I'm like, I'll say it. And if you feel slightly uncomfortable, like, that's me all the time with my grief, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, if you feel a little bit like I'm not even sorry about that. If we're friends, like, you should try to understand a little bit.
Yeah. Like, sorry, not sorry, because you're teaching, what this does too is it teaches empathy. Like, I got that. I mean, I think that's one of the most beautiful gifts in grief is empathy. Like, I vividly remember all the love and support after my mother died, all the, you know, neighbors walking over with like meals and like chicken soup. And like, I knew then I wanted to grow up and be that. Like, I knew that that meant so much that people would just show up for you when, for a lot of people, they avoid it out of, again, out of love. Or just, you know, really just are so like frozen in it and don't want to really show up or offer support out of fear they're going to say the wrong thing and do the wrong thing. That's why I always say, like, if it's coming from a place of love, you're never going to say or do the wrong thing. But kids need it all. Like, kids need supportive friends, but a lot of their friends really don't know what to say. And there's no rule book. There's no script that my best friends had growing up. So I would have loved to listen to you two talk, and it would have felt the same. Like, oh my God, they're just like two friends talking about something that, like, I want to be around the table with you guys talking about that. Like, I want in on that conversation, because in my own, you know, community, in my own social circle, I don't have anyone who is there, you know, that can say, I know what you're going through. So yeah, but you need it all. You need supportive family, supportive friends, but then a community of people who really get it.
Yeah. And it's kind of surprising, but I guess not really, the amount of people that reach out that want to come on the podcast and share their story. And, you know, as a podcast, it's like you have so many like limited episodes, right? And we have to have like a vision of like, okay, what we want each episode to be. But I also, when we're talking, we're like, we don't want to not share anyone's story. And that's what inspired us to create our Substack, was because when people reach out and say they want to share their story, we're like, well, we don't know right now, like, if that's a fit for like what we want our season to be like or whatever. But if you feel compelled to share your story, we want to share your story. And that's why we started the Substack, because like, we want to share it. And this is an outlet that we're creating so that we can share other stories. And maybe when we have a conversation and hear about your story, maybe we can collaborate in the future for different things, whether or not it's on the podcast. But if you feel compelled to share it from like listening to our podcast or watching anything we post on social media, we want to support that. Like, we want to help you share your story, because how therapeutic it is, how healing it can be. So that is a big piece. And it kind of surprised me, like, so many people see something like, oh, do you have guests? Can we come on? And at that part, we were kind of surprised at first, like, how many people? But now we're like, how can we also help you in a way or share your story? But also, we still need to figure out like what is best for what we want to convey on our podcast. So it is a hard thing, because I never want to just like dismiss somebody's story or say like everyone's story is important, but we also know like, okay, these are the stories we want to share for this series, you know. And but yeah, it's been a very interesting thing, but that is what inspired us to create another medium, because if you have a story to share, please share it with us. But to go back a little bit on the inspiration of Empower and how you started with just kids, at what point did you realize like, oh, I need to expand the age to young adults and support a bigger population? Because I think I said I lost the first one at 26 and I felt so thrown off. I felt a lot of those same things where it's like people don't know what to say. It's still fairly young for like losing a parent. And it's never, I feel like at any age is too young, but because I feel like you always need your parents. But I felt so lost in that space, and it was just so many friend changes and different things. And I was like in my mid-20s, so it's like supposed to be a fun time, and it was just a very confusing thing. What made you decide like, okay, this isn't just for like the 9-year-old me, but I want to also help a bigger group?
It's such a great question. I'm so glad that you asked this, because this is dating back now probably 2 years in, right? When I first started this, I was really only serving teenage girls. I think the age range was like 14 to 18, right? And I quickly learned, and you have to listen to, like, when you start a nonprofit, you really have to let your community inform your programs. And what I kept hearing was that girl that was 19, 20, 21, 24, you know, as you get older and you're without, you know, your mom or your father, and you're also reflecting back on your loss, that becomes a really impactful time in your life. So for me, when my mom died, I was in fourth grade. By the time I got to high school, teachers were still giving me like a pen, like, oh, you know, have your mom sign this permission slip at home. Like, there was no, it was almost like that memo didn't travel with me. And so it was, as I got older, it never got easier to have to tell someone my mother died. So then I go off to college and I'm 18 years old and a freshman on the campus of UConn. I was at the University of Connecticut. And I swear to God, it happened for me like this. I just like looked around one day and was like, oh my God, my mom died, because I truly was on autopilot for probably 10 years. And then I learned through a very, very dear friend of mine. She was my childhood hero. She's a writer. Her name is Hope Edelman. And she wrote this book that changed my life called Motherless Daughters. And she and I later became friends, and which is such a cool feeling to like actually connect with like your childhood hero. And I was telling her that story. I said, I swear to God, I know this sounds funny, but it was almost like I literally came to the realization my mom died. I was like 18 years old, like 10 years later. And she goes, no, of course, like all the research suggests, like a lot of times kids will grieve when they leave their childhood home. And so I realized that, and I'm hearing from Hope Edelman, because again, I wasn't the writer, the researcher. I wasn't an expert in this. I didn't talk about my mother for 20 years before I started this nonprofit. And so I'm listening to that. And then another good friend, Claire Bidwell Smith, she wrote a great book called Anxiety, the Missing Stage of Grief. And she said something about that age range, like that 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. It's like all of their friends have like a cushy landing. But when you're a kid who's lost a parent in childhood and you have like sort of that one ton brick on your chest, you have more of a worry. You're worried about everyone around you. You're worried about your future. You're then as you get older, you're like, I was missing my, it was like the missing her was just as hard as like the, oh my God, she just died. And now I'm just living in this house with my dad and my brother. Like what just happened in my life? And so what she says about cushy landings, I could really relate to. And I was watching that firsthand, these young girls who were now 17, 18 years old, part of our program. And I realized I've got to build community for them. I don't want them to go off to their next stop, which is maybe college or full-time jobs, where they feel further isolated, like even more of an alien, because now they feel like they don't have as much support as their peers. So the kind of the joke is like, you know, your college roommate, you know, has a bad breakup and can run home or, you know, and has their mom's shoulder to cry on. Or, you know, you get out of college and you take that first job and it doesn't work out and you want to quit the job, but where are you going to live? And, you know, for a lot of kids, early parent loss, they feel like they don't have as much support as their peers do. And then again, it's like another trigger, like, oh my God, this is not going away. Like, what's going to happen when I have a baby? What's going to happen at my wedding? Who's going to be the mother of the bride? The father of the bride walks her down the aisle. Like all of those things, they're just lifelong. And so I knew then that we had to expand to serve children and young adults up through 24 to continue to build community. To say that I don't want to perpetuate a stereotype that when you become an adult at age 18, that this somehow all just like falls in line. It's lifelong. I always say losing my mom, it was like a tattoo. It never went away. It fades, I'd say, but it wasn't going anywhere. And I wanted it to go away. I wanted it to just be gone 2 years. I wanted to be over the five stages of grief and like put it all in my rearview mirror. And that's just really not how grief works, unfortunately.
That was a gorgeous line you just said. I'm like, Rachel, we gotta clip that somewhere and put it on a plaque, because that was well said.
I love what line? What is it?
Grief is like a tattoo. Like that's so. Yeah.
You know who said that? Rosie O'Donnell said that. Because before I had, you know, you said something too, Rachel, that I want to talk about, like giving a voice. But as I'm thinking about this, before there was a podcast, before there was an Instagram account, like before there were books on the shelf, really no one wanted to talk about the death of a young parent, right? So you really were alone in this decades ago. And so I'm so grateful for the way the world has kind of evolved in the grief space, and grateful for podcast hosts like both of you. Because it's not easy to relive your loss either. I know that. I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years and I still sometimes I'm like the 9-year-old girl whose mom died. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm 47 years old. Like, I have like a 17 and 14 year old, like I'm married and I'm still talking about this thing. And I wonder if people think, God, Carol, when are you going to stop talking about this thing? But it's my life. It's my story. It's the single most impactful thing that's ever happened to me, the death of my mother. And so anyways, I think about, I didn't know anyone whose mom died, but I knew celebrities. So I knew Madonna, and I had this obsession with Madonna growing up, and I couldn't really understand why. I mean, I think all, you know, young girls had like Madonna posters. You know, if you're my age and you're listening, you had like a Madonna poster on your wall. But I had this connection to her. And then I later learned she was 5 years old when her mom died of breast cancer. And I was like, oh, that was it. or Rosie O'Donnell. She had a talk show that I would skip class in college to like watch her talk show. And then I realized her mom died of cancer when she was 10 years old. It was like almost instinctual. And that's what it was. Every time I meet someone who knows loss and trauma or tragedy or that, like anyone who knows that kind of pain that brings you to your knees, I do have a connection with them. It's like, I see you, I hear you, like we're all in this together. And that's a beautiful thing in this world, if you can find that. So I found that in like celebrities, you know, who I would never come to meet, but they survived it. And so I could see myself in them, if that makes any sense. And then Rachel, you're talking about like a voice, like I'm sure people are writing you saying, I want to share my story. And part of that might be something I can relate to, which is I didn't talk about my mom for 20 years, but I was desperate to. And so like when I got older, I'll never forget my friends and I, my girlfriends are like my lifelines today. They're my best friends from childhood, are still my best friends today. And we were like in our 20s and like at a dive bar at home. I grew up in Hartford, Connecticut, and I think we were all home for Thanksgiving and having a beer. And my one girlfriend, Julie, she was the bravest and she just got up the courage and she goes, you know, growing up, why didn't you ever talk about your mom? And I was like, what? I'm like, why didn't you ever ask me about my mom? Like, you guys avoided the topic. And they were like, absolutely not. That is not fair. You created rules that said we are not allowed to ask you about your mom. And she was right. And that was a mistake. And I didn't know my friends would have held space for me. You know, I didn't know my friends wanted to help me. There was no script going back and forth. And that's what I tried to do at Empower. We empower the kids to tell their friends, their family, their teachers, like, it's okay to ask me about my loss because I hear you whispering behind my back anyways. And that's way worse. I'd rather you just ask me. And so when I started this nonprofit, the funny thing was, you know, this was an idea that sort of nagged at me for like 2 years. Anyone who's ever started a business or started a nonprofit organization or started a podcast knows, you know, it takes some time where like you have the idea and it's kind of like, it's a good idea, right? Someone should do this. Okay, I'll do it, right? And when I started my nonprofit, I thought, okay, I just need to stomach this. I got to talk about my mom. And so I'll do it. You know, I'll have a gala every year and that will be how I'll raise money. So I've got to get on a microphone and talk about how my mom died when I was 9 years old. And I was like horizontal for 2 weeks after, right? It just was kind of a traumatic experience. And then I got the idea that maybe I could ask a teenage girl to talk at like a fundraising event or on the news. If we got an interview from a local ABC affiliate was going to come in my living room and ask me about this nonprofit I just started. And I thought maybe a young girl could do that. And then I was like, no, there's no way. I don't want to exploit her story. That'd be terrible for me to ask. And someone really smart around me said, that's not for you to decide. You need to give the girls a choice. And from that day forward, I always gave the kids enrolled at Empower a choice to talk, either at an event or on the news, and they were fighting over the microphone. And that's when I realized, oh my God, that kids want a voice in this. And we didn't know how to say, I want to talk about this, you know?
Yeah.
But it's really important that people have a voice and that no one else tells your story. It is your story to tell.
Yeah, so much that you said I relate to. It took me like 10 years to talk about losing people. And granted, I lost like my dad, my mom, my sister in a 4-year period. So I feel like I kind of shut down in many ways about it. It's so hard. It still chokes me up just like saying that line. I'm like, how did that happen? Like, how am I even standing? Like, that is horrific.
That's like not real. Like, that's not real.
It's not real. And it took me forever. And I never talked about it. And I always tried to like put it in a box of like, okay, if we're out with friends, I'm going to be this other version of me and then I'll cry at night and it'll be fine or not deal with it. And there's so many conflicting feelings when you're talking about it to family just because it's so many people that are, you know, they just want you to be okay, but you're like, you don't get how I'm feeling right now. And it's a really isolating, like hard feeling. And then you're like, I don't want to talk to you about it anymore because I feel like you don't get the loss that I'm feeling. The people that I talk to every single day that I went to for everything get that feeling that I have, that they're just gone. And so I kept it like separate because it's so hard and it's still hard to talk about. But I realized the same thing where it's like you keep your friends separate because you don't talk about it. And then it's that same thing. And now because I talk about it openly, my friends will actually ask me about it and bring up stuff because I talk about it. They feel comfortable to bring it up to me. because I never went to them for that. And it's a big thing. And now we talk about it all the time. It's still not easy. Like I could cry right now. You know, it's still not an easy thing to talk about all the time. But because of that, it has also helped my other relationships because I talk about it more freely. And it also helps you connect to other people. Like that's how me and Kendall got really close. We just like both were in a space to like, okay, we want to talk about it now and help other people with their grief. And you just get each other's like pain. And we've made so many new friends just through this space and through the podcast, people that just get it and you just connect in a deeper way. So I related so much to your story about that because I think it's so important. No matter how long it's been, you can always open up at some point.
Well, and Molly Shannon wrote a book. She was 4 years old when she lost her mom. And in her book, she says, the nicest person ever growing up was this man. He was a priest at her church. And one day he just asked her, how are you doing since your mom died and your sister died? And you're like, if you're just listening to that, you'd be like, why does that make someone so nice that all they did? I mean, he's a priest. Shouldn't he be asking you? But so should a teacher. Maybe so should a pediatrician. Like, so should the neighbor. And no one's asking out of love. No one's asking because they're like, well, I don't want to rock the boat. Like, Karen Todd, my older brother Todd, you know, they look like they're doing okay. You know, they have straight A's or, you know, they're, you know, college bound. You know, everything looks to be good. So don't rock the boat. And again, that's like creating rules that say, like, you're not allowed to talk about this here. And I'm not suggesting I wanted to talk about my loss every day, all day. And I still don't. I mean, but it is so much a part of who I am that to not talk about it would be completely inauthentic, like would be completely absurd. Now looking back, like how did I think I could avoid that topic for 20 years? But I agree with you that, you know, you just need a space. You need a space to be able to talk about it.
Something that I think is really beautiful and inspiring and definitely for younger people who are in the throes of grief. I had felt after my dad had passed, like that all I will be doing the rest of my life is just figuring out this grief and I'll never aspire to all the dreams I was hoping to achieve. And I think for the first few years, I was just focusing on how do you relive again after that? How do you get back into a normal life and figuring out what this whole new world that you're living in looks like? And I tell Rachel all the time, I'm like, I never would have thought that something like the worst day in my life, the worst experience I've been through would have led to all this. Like us, like even just processing my own grief, but helping others through my worst situation and hopefully helping them through their worst situation. And hearing your story and that you're so young, obviously you're so young and you didn't think about how am I going to create something to help other grievers in the future? Many years had passed and you had to process your own grief and for you to then like identify a problem in the grief space and be like, I think I might have a solution to help their grievers. And I think Rachel, we talked about this. We had talked about this earlier in the last season that early in the grief, you're trying to find ways to honor your people. And sometimes it just doesn't really align that well, but you're like, how do I keep their memory alive? You see all these beautiful things that people do in honor of their loved ones. And there's this weird pressure to like do this big thing. And your story is really, I guess, soothing in that you don't have to create this monumental thing right in the middle of all your grief. Like just focus on your grief and get through your life. And then the honoring will come when it naturally happens. And like that's proof through Empower and all the children that you've helped that your mother's legacy is still carried on through these opportunities that you give these children.
You don't need any pressure to grieve the right way. There's like, you know, we always say like, it's not a grief competition. And what I mean by that is you don't have to start a nonprofit. You know, I didn't start this nonprofit to pay tribute to my mother. I mean, I know I'm doing that, of course, inadvertently, but I really was ready to be in service. I think service fuels your soul. And people will always say, oh, Cara Belvin turned like her grief into good. And that's fine to look at it that way. I personally thought I was uniquely positioned to do it. I knew a little bit about the nonprofit world. I started my career as a psychologist. I kind of saw what there was like a hole in the market. I thought I was uniquely positioned to do it. And I'm a doer. I'm not a writer. I'm not a researcher. I'm not a therapist today. I felt that was a really great way to be in service to a kid like me. And if I could kind of alleviate some pain, but there's no pressure. I mean, I'll come across social media posts that are you know, maybe it's a woman like me who's got a beautiful way that she celebrates her mom or dad who dies with her own children. And I think, oh my God, I'm not doing enough to honor my mom with my children. Like, I'm in competition. And I have to remember to stop. Like, the last thing we need after surviving something so hard and reliving your grief, because it's a fact of life, the last thing we need is to put that added pressure on ourselves. So no one has to go start a nonprofit. No one has to, you know, start a podcast. No one has to do the thing that they're not ready to do. But when you get to that point where you are in a position where maybe like you can help somebody else, just helping one person, showing up for one person. We're in the middle of writing a little new segment on our newsletter, like a, you know, FAQs. Like, what I mean by FAQ is like, what's the most frequently asked question I've gotten over the last 10 years? It's the, you know, somebody on the street or, you know, in a podcast interview like this is, you know, I know someone whose mom died, or I know someone who just lost her dad and she's young or she's an adult. What do I say? What do I do? Mother's Day is coming up. What am I going to do? And I'm always like, first of all, I don't have the right answer. So like, don't go looking to me for me to tell you, because I am still trying to figure it out. But just do something. Because like I said a minute ago, it's like the whispers behind my back were worse, right? Because in that you're teaching rules that say, you're not going to talk to me about it. And so I should not bring it up to you. So if I'm feeling really low or feeling really sad about this, this ain't the place that I can go and get, you know, I can lean on somebody. And that, I think, in the end, if, you know, when you don't feel seen and heard, you know, I can't help but think that incites rage, right? Like, I don't look like a rageful person. I was a straight A student who, you know, teachers, you know, thought I was a nice girl in the back of the classroom, but I felt rage. I mean, I felt enraged. I was mad that she died. I was mad I was the one it happened to. I didn't understand why it happened to my family. I also had no space to talk about it. And that's not anyone's fault, but I was mad about it. And I look around the world sometimes at some people and I think, is that part of their rage? Like that no one asked them how they were doing. And instead, people just assumed they knew how they were doing without asking. And so my advice whenever someone says, I know so-and-so, and what should I do? What should I say? I'm like, just do something. Like, just say something or do something. You'll never do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing if it comes from a place of love. It shows empathy and it shows courage, the kind of courage that's really hard to muster up, but it shows courage when you're able to talk to somebody about their loss.
So through Empower, what have you seen been the most helpful for the kids in the program?
I think, again, it's so simple. The purpose of Empower was just to build community. So when you get in a room and you look around the room and you see all of these kids and adults that are like all in this together, that restores confidence. So that was something that kind of surprised me. I mean, I knew I was starting a grief organization, a youth mentor organization that could build resilience and confidence and empower children. Truly, the word wasn't just a buzzword at the time when I was naming the org. But one thing that I'll say, it's universal. And people say grief is universal. And I think that, you know, we've all heard that a million times. But it's truly universal when I know I was onto something in the early years. Like, I'd be talking in a room, whether it was with a donor, or if it was with an interested mentor, or if it was a podcast interview. And I was saying the thing that a lot of people are, you know, just want you to say, and everyone's shaking their head saying like, oh my God, that happened to me too. Like, that was my story too, even though our circumstances were different and everyone's story is so unique. So still the most uplifting and most powerful thing that I hear from a kid who's come to an event like this is, you know, like at my school, I'm just the girl whose mom died. But here I know that that's not true. And that's where they're really learning the ways of the world, that maybe out of sequence, they had this very, very painful, very sad, very tragic thing happen to them and their family that can't be explained. You know, we don't know why, and we don't know that, you know, everything happens for a reason. We don't know why. But out of sequence, they're having this very difficult experience. But as they move through their life, they will meet people who know adversity, and no one's free of it. Like, no one's sparred of pain and loss and adversity. And so I think what that confidence that a lot of kids are gaining at Empower, that helps them kind of put their shoulders back, stand 2 feet taller, because growing up, I felt small. truly, when you feel different, you feel pretty small. You know, I started wearing like 4-inch heels. I'm like, it's no wonder I'm like 5'3" and I'd be in like 4-inch heels because it just, I felt taller. And that mattered to me because growing up, I didn't have that. And so that helps kids build resiliency and build confidence. And then in turn, they're going to help someone else get there too. I mean, I just think the greatest gift you receive in grief is empathy. And so it's pretty universal. What children will say about our events are, oh my God, I didn't know this many people had lost a parent. And when you think about it, you know, think global, act local, empowers hyper local. Kids come together in an event space and the other kids that are in the room are from a half an hour away or an hour away. They would otherwise never have met that person, right? Because your world is pretty small when you're little. In high school, your world is pretty small. But I can prove to you there are other kids around the state you're living in that are also going through something very similar, know a lot about what you're going through. You're not alone in this. And that is the most powerful thing, I think, for a kid to just realize I'm not alone in my grief.
Through the program, have you noticed like a reoccurring theme with what kids or young adults are experiencing that you feel like is like the, I don't want to say the biggest issue because I feel like grief is so unique, but are there certain things that you've seen as kind of like the biggest issues that kids and young adults are experiencing with grief?
I think there are a few things here. I think a lot of kids feel misunderstood still. Like I say, like, oh my God, like my mom died so long ago, I mean, almost 40 years ago. And I'm like, in a lot of ways, not much has changed, right? Like I can still relate to a 9-year-old girl today whose mom died or whose dad died and that feeling othered. So I think the theme throughout has been this feeling that no one understands. It can really incite anger and rage, right? Like, where are my people that are supposed to like come forward for me and like, and you know, and lean that I can lean on. It's that they don't know anyone else going through this. They feel alone in the world in it. They might feel misunderstood. They might be frustrated that they do get a sense from people around them that people are expecting that, you know, they stop talking about it, stop bringing it up, and just kind of move on, move forward in it. I think those are the greatest themes. I think around milestone moments that gets kind of perpetuated. And I try not to perpetuate these stereotypes that the girl whose mom died is really, really struggling during the prom. It's not. I grieved at the prom, but I grieved on a Tuesday. Like I grieved in the summer. I grieved all the time. You know, I never forgot my mother died. Like people are like, well, I didn't want to like rock the boat or bring it up. And I'm like, you wouldn't be reminding me of anything that I forgot about. I thought about her probably once a minute, like a lightning bolt for many years. And that subsided, thank God. But in the beginning, it really felt like a lightning bolt. Like there was no hiding it. And so I think that, you know, a lot of kids have this same universal reaction. Like, I want to be understood and I want to just feel what I feel. I want to be okay to say I'm not doing okay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's so true. And I hope there are people listening to the podcast that take away that and can comprehend that their grief is so much bigger and so much more relatable with other people that can help them with their grief, but they can also help others with their grief. So is there any advice or words of wisdom that you feel compelled to share with anybody listening to the podcast right now?
I want to be careful to say, you know, I don't want it to make it seem easy. Somebody said to me, once upon a time in the early years growing this nonprofit, and I was raising money and I was looking for more supporters and donors. And someone said to me, you know, I just don't understand the mission of Empower, because if you turned out all right, why do these girls need help? And it signaled for me a couple of things, right? I mean, I was certainly a little taken aback, but
sure,
I could understand it. I understood it and I didn't have a good answer for it, because you're right, I did turn out all right. But you know, as we always say, when I joke, I have so many close friends that I've made, you know, we have thousands of volunteers around the world. I do not do this alone. I always say, like, this was a good idea I had, but I do not do this alone. I have countless volunteers working tirelessly to really fulfill on our mission and bring this to other communities. But we always joke, you know, yeah, I turned out okay. Like I was doing fine, but like define fine. Like I want to be clear like, take the win. Like, I'm in that stage of my life or my grief where I can give back and I feel really strong and empowered and I feel confident. My shoulders are back. I didn't feel like that for a long time. And so take the win, like on a good day in grief, like take it, like do everything you can with that day. Like really like stand tall, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, as people say and always want us to do. But like really like stand tall and like do good and find joy in peace, because there's really no joy in peace in grief, particularly in the beginning, right? Yeah. It's a minefield and it's a one ton brick on your chest. And so you want that to, you want that weight to lessen, and it will. I mean, I promise everyone that it does lessen, and that gets lighter when you have people to share that weight with. But, you know, take the loss too. Like, I do believe in a pity party. I do believe in not getting out of bed for a day or two. Look, I mean, you have to keep up with a life going on around you as normal. There's no doubt about that, especially for a kid. You've got to go to school and do your homework, and you got to go to practice. And, you know, you have, you know, music lessons, or you have expectations, and you got to be a part of the world. You got to be a player in the world, right? And that's what your parent wanted for you. They couldn't leave this earth knowing that their death would destroy you. But go easy on yourself too. I mean, talking in an hour long podcast makes it look a little easy, you know, for me having lost my mom when I was 9 years old, but there was no part of it that was easy. There's beauty in grief, and I see it now. Life is short. My mother was 37 when she died. It's undeniable turning 37 was hard for me, right? Because I know life is short, and because I do take, like, every day is for the taking. But some days are for pity parties. Like, some days are for really being really sad and really missing that person, or just really mad about it. And I think to deny that and pretend that that's not true, I think can be pretty harmful for all of us. So I think that's my one takeaway, is like, I love this conversation and I love spending an hour talking. I've got my blazer on and like, I'm feeling great. Like, this is an easy conversation. But the truth of the matter is, it's not always easy to talk about my mom. It's not always easy to think. I mean, it's like the saddest story in the history of sad. Mm-hmm. She should be here. She should be a grandmother to my kids. Like, she lost out on so much. And I lost out. And so, you know, I don't know. You take it as it comes. And if you're in a position where you can give back or do good, it will fuel your soul. But maybe if today's a bad day, it's not the day to do some good. It's the day to actually, like, give yourself grace and to heal. And I'd say this is the most healing thing I've ever done. I found my way to therapy in my 20s. Thank God I had a therapist. She was amazing. She looked like Mother Goose. She had like this like horrible like bun, like gray hair bun. And she was adorable. And she was the smartest woman I ever met. And she told me, you know, that feeling that you're feeling right now in your stomach. I mean, I was getting sick, physically ill. And she said, that's you missing your mom. And I thought she was crazy. I was like, no, I'm just stressed out about grad school. I'm just stressed out. You know, I was like hyper independent and like classic overachiever. And she's like, no, you're missing your mom. And that was true. I really didn't give myself grace, or didn't give myself time to really miss her. And so I just want to be clear about that, you know, none of us are trying to make it look easy or less sad, but it's life. And, you know, these are the cards we were dealt. Like, how do you move forward and how do you find joy and peace? It takes quite a bit of work.
I definitely second the pity party. I don't think I've thrown myself enough pity parties. I definitely feel like I was just trying to like get through one loss, and then you just keep getting hit with stuff and you're like, I'm just trying to go forward. And like you said, like autopilot, you're like, I just need to get through this. I need to get through this. And you don't really know like, what does that mean? What does that mean for the future? What does that mean for everything? But I feel like I never went to like the pity party option doing when I was like in the middle of it all, where I'm like, you know what? Sometimes I should take the pity party card. Because what I am going through still and what I went through at the time is so hard. And it's still hard for me every single day. So like, if I need to throw that around sometimes, I should. Like, I still don't really, but like, I should, because it is really hard. And you don't get it until you get it. And I don't want people to get this feeling.
Well, I think if you give yourself grace in that, what I mean by inciting rage, right, is enough days of that piling on where like, I didn't take a pity party and I should have, or I didn't give myself time for self-care and I did, like, you become angry and pretty resentful. And what I learned in building a youth serving organization is I really wanted kids to not feel envious of their peers. Like, and I, for whatever reason growing up, I wasn't envious of my peers. I wasn't mad at them because they had their mother and I didn't. And I think that served me really well. I felt like I knew something. I had a secret. Like I had an in that, like, this world is hard. And like, there are a lot of people hurting in this world. And across the country, there are a lot of people hurting. And so you're not alone in that. And no one's spared, you know, pain and suffering. So I would say, you know, give yourself grace, meaning if you really learn about grief and if you really learn about, you know, some of the effects, especially in the immediate, like acute, you know, my friend Claire Bidwell-Smith talks about anxiety as like the missing, you know, sixth stage of grief. My friend Megan Jarvis writes about like the fatigue and, you know, like what that does to you physically. And it's very true. And I think that if we're just really cognizant of that, you know, live in gratitude. Again, I don't try to compare my life to anyone else's or say mine was harder or easier. That would be silly to, you know, to suggest losing your mom is harder than losing your dad. There is no grief competition going on here. Like, we're all in this together. But in some ways, I think that the more we kind of educate ourselves about what the effects of a loss can do, I think you would naturally give yourself more grace and not put so much pressure on yourself.
Very true.
And ultimately live in gratitude, right? Like, I mean, that if there's anything you learn as a young person whose parent died when they were young, it's that, you know, my mother left this world kicking and screaming. She would have given anything to still be here. And so what is my responsibility? It really is to take advantage of all that I have and all that I've been given. I have a beautiful life and I still had a beautiful childhood. It wasn't without pain. And I'm trying to make that a little bit easier for kids moving forward.
I love that you said you have a beautiful life, because that's something that we reference is like, even if you've been through so much, you need to find the joy and you need to like still believe that you can have a beautiful life and that you deserve a beautiful life, because it's hard. Like you mentioned earlier, like, weddings, missing out on grandkids, like there's so many things that you miss out when you lose people before big moments. And every big moment after, even if they were there for some, still feels sad and, you know, very mixed emotions through it. So there's so many different things. You like don't want to look at the future. You don't want to be positive, but it's like, we're still here. They would want us to be happy. Like, you need to look at the time that you have as like precious and valuable. And like, what do you want to do with that time? But to feel like you can have a beautiful life is like impossible for some people. But it's like, you need to get to that step where like, it's still always going to be there, but you can still live a beautiful life with that being a piece of your life as well.
Yes. You know, someone who's maybe listening in a really dark place or really painful place, it's going to be hard to convince them that like, trust me, there's beauty in grief. Trust me, this gets easier. Trust me, this will be beautiful one day. You'll look back on this. But if you really put that energy into the universe, if you really believe that, you know, that things will get easier, then your energy will be, I think, directed in the right place. And my hope is that, you know, people don't come out with resentment or envy, or they really do try to live in gratitude for what they did. I had my mother for 9 years. That's not a long time. And I understand that. But my mom gave me wings to fly. Right. And so there became a different way of looking at it, a different perspective that I could take on as I got older. And I love like people in your generation and the generations, you know, before you and coming up after you, they're learning things about like safe spaces. And we're talking about things like self-care. And so that shouldn't be confused with selfishness. Like, self-care is really important. It's really important to be good to yourself. Like, you know, don't treat yourself like a doormat. You know, there's no card to play. Like, I don't believe that, because I've heard that on the flip side, you know, somebody will say, well, she's playing the mom card. And I'm like, do you know how painful that is to hear that? That's not a thing. You know, it's a painful experience to lose a parent. And so they're not trying to placate. They might actually just be really sad today. And that has to be, acceptable. You know, I always say, Oprah Winfrey always said, all people ever wanted was to be seen and heard. And I didn't think about it until I'd started a nonprofit. But years ago, you know, growing up, Oprah Winfrey had this talk show, like 25 years. And on the talk show, she had maybe celebrities one day. She had everyday people. She had like salacious stories and scandals and all these things. But she said, like, in the end, every guest she had on her show all had this one thing in common. They all just wanted to be seen and heard. And I think that that's just true for everybody and everyone's painful experience. And then in time, you kind of learn what to do with that pain.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, I really love this conversation. I feel like you never know where the conversation's going to go, even if you have like a plan. You just never know what's going to be said. And I feel like for every conversation that we've had, it's always been better than what we envisioned or like pictured, because people's grief is so like multifaceted, right? And people's journeys and what they decide to do is so much bigger than just like what you may see online or see in certain areas. So I feel like we've been pleasantly surprised for every conversation of just kind of how deep it gets and like how connected you get with your grief in the conversation. So we appreciate you so much for coming here and sharing about Empower. I think it was a much needed piece in the grief space. And I think it shows the value of just giving grief the space that it needs, like that you need to heal and it's always with you. As a young person, I feel like especially you aren't given that space. Like you said, people want you to be over it. They want you to be like healed because they don't want you to be going through it. But having that want for them doesn't mean that it's gone. And so having your organization makes it, invalidates people that feel like it shouldn't be, you know, because when people, adults especially, tell you that, you think like maybe that's true. But creating what you're creating, it shows people that like, no, you need to be dealing with it. It's forever. But here's ways to help you and help heal you along the journey, because you're continually healing, I feel like.
Well, and if there's young people, you know, I'm coming from such a specific place where I'm, you know, we're serving young people of parent loss, not yet sibling loss. I hope to one day, you know, I think there's certainly a way to scale our mentor program for sibling loss, because that's such an isolating experience, I would imagine, too. But I hope that any young people that are finding their way to your podcast, that there is a young girl, because girls are always watching. Girls are always watching women. They're always watching how you respond, how you laugh, how you, you know, how you speak. And a girl will see themselves in your story, and you're proving to them that there is a beautiful life at their fingertips, right? And so the more you speak out, I really hope that there are more girls that you reach that are going to listen and try to emulate, you know, this sentiment. And that's, not a lot of people can say that. That's a really beautiful thing. It's great what you're doing.
I'd be super excited when this airs and I can share this with so many people with children who have gone through this experience. And honestly, this has been our cleanest episode. Snaps for me for not cussing, but...
Oh my God, I swear like a sailor, had I known it would be acceptable, I would have just...
We definitely swear.
We love to swear. Italians love to swear. I have a serious problem swearing.
We generally swear. It just happens. I feel like grief and swearing kind of.
Totally. You need to throw it around. Yeah, because you have to just, you know, you have to be careful with your words. Like, it's so funny. We always say too at Empower, like, grief is so complicated, and some people want to say it's not. Like, it's not. No, grief is universal, and grief, you know, everyone's going to die. So that's the one thing, you know, people will mourn a death, and that doesn't make it simple. It still is very complicated. And we always say, like, running a nonprofit, it's not, people are like, oh, well, it's not rocket science. And I'm like, no, it kind of is rocket science. It's really, it's hard to navigate. And that's what, and I'm so glad there's so many different mediums. Like, there's out there, there's a kid who knows who I am and runs the other way when they see me walking. They're like, oh my God, there's Cora Belbin. She's going to like ask me to like join her nonprofit. Or, you know, she has a Mother's Day event coming up. She's going to invite me to it and I don't want to go. Like, and that still happens a year later. Like 99% of the time they enroll in our program and say, I've known who you are. I was watching. I just wasn't really ready to be a part of it. I didn't want it. I didn't need it. And so I always say, like, at Empower, we're just like, the door is just always open. Like, there's a no pressure. It's a super casual. It's a when you're ready kind of a thing. Our podcast is just like that, too. It's digestible. And you just hope somebody finds it on the right day and they listen to it and they're like, OK, I can put one foot in front of the other today. Or somebody finds that right book at a bookstore that's like, oh, that book changed my life. And you're like, it doesn't even have to change your life. It just has to keep you going. you know, so that's what your podcast is doing.
I think that's so great to say. Like, it doesn't have to, it just has to keep you going, because you just need to get through like that next step. And if you're feeling really low, like, you can just get to the next thing, like, find that one piece of joy to then affirm, like, you can have another piece of joy, and like, just take
right.
those like little things. And because maybe the beautiful life doesn't feel real right now, but if you can find one thing that brings you joy, one thing that makes you happy, then, and you can actually start envisioning again that there's other happy things that can come back into your life. Hopefully after listening to this episode and hearing more about our grief and more about Kara's grief, like, you can relate to that, or just see like there's a future that you can have if you just take that step and find the resources that you need. So we always like to say, you know, do you have anything coming out or any exciting new programs or updates or anything you want to share with the audience?
Yes. So we're always looking for more support. If you go on our website, it's weareempower.org. Hopefully it's just that easy. There's just like easy clickable buttons if you want to become a volunteer. If you're not ready to become a mentor, maybe you want to volunteer and help plan an event like a Mother's Day or Father's Day event coming up this spring. We'd love to have your help. If you're interested in fundraising, we've got lots of fundraisers going around in the country this spring. We have a beautiful Luminaria event where we honor loved ones with a personalized Luminaria bag with a candle with our loved one's name in memory of or in honor of. So you'll find that at weareempower.org. And of course, if you know or love someone who has experienced the loss of a mom or dad and they're up through age 24, please refer them. Referral is super easy. It's free. All of our programs are free of charge, of course, to the family. But referring a child is easy if you have the blessing from the parent, the surviving guardian, a neighbor, a teacher, a friend. Make the enrollment and we can take it from there.
Thank you so much. That was super great. And hopefully these listeners can spread the word and help so many children out there who are grieving.
Awesome. You guys are the best. Thank you so much. Thank you for finding us on Instagram and approaching, you know, and actually asking us to be a part of this. It's huge. And I have to tell you, and I mean it, I'm not just, you know, blowing smoke, because we're still word of mouth and we don't have a marketing budget. I mean, that's, you know, we raised $7 million over the last 10 years. And believe it or not, I didn't have the money to set aside for marketing, PR, all of those things. We don't have our own podcast. So we just kind of sit back and hope that people like you call us and invite us to the conversation. And then from there, there's always conversions. I promise you, and I'll tell you, I'll be emailing you in a month that'll be like, oh my God, there's so-and-so and so-and-so listen to the podcast and now is in Los Angeles or New York or Boston and wants to become a mentor, or sadly, you know, they want to enroll their children into our program. So every time we're on a podcast, it's truly how we grow. So it's really media and word of mouth. So I can't thank you guys enough. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the homework you did. Thank you for welcoming me. I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.